It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, two of the world's leading primatologists. I'll talk with Jill Preetz of Iowa State University, who's been studying the behavior of savanna chimpanzees in Senegal for the last 13 years. But first, Jane Goodall. Her work studying and recording the behavior of wild chimpanzees beginning during the summer of 1960 in what is now Gombe National Park in Tanzania transformed the study of animal behavior. And even more importantly, it profoundly changed our understanding of what it means to be man. In spite of her love for field work and her gifts for observation, she has devoted the last 30 years of her life to traveling the world and telling her stories in an effort to save the chimpanzees from extinction, as well as inspiring her audiences to get involved in preserving habitat and protecting other species on Earth. She'll be speaking Monday night at 7:30 in Iowa City at Carver Hawkeye Arena. Her speech, Sowing the Seeds of Hope, is free and open to the public, and she's with me on the phone now. Hello, Dr. Goodall.
Oh, hello. Good morning.
Thank you so much for talking with us today.
It's a pleasure.
In so much of your work, you write about how you were really never happier than when you were living in the wild with the chimpanzees. In fact, you write about the first night you spent in a tent in Africa when you were a secretary to Louis Leakey and how you heard the lions roaring and you never felt happier in your entire life. But about 3 decades ago, you decided to give up that part of your life for the most part and spend 300 days of the year on the road speaking to people. What made you make that decision?
It was because of a big conference I went to where all the chimpanzee researchers for the very first time came together. And we had a session on conservation, and it was just utterly shocking to see that right across Africa, chimp numbers were dropping, forests were disappearing, they were being hunted for food and caught in wire snares and being subjected to human disease as people went further and further into the forest. And I was shattered to see how terrible the situation was. And we also had a session on chimps in some captive situation, like medical research laboratories, and to see secret footage of our closest relatives in 5-foot by 5-foot cages with nothing to do for 30 years or so was even more shocking. And I just felt I had to try to do something.
Had you been sheltered from this information?
I knew about the medical research that was going on, but I had not been into a medical research lab. And up until that point, you know, it was after I published a big book called The Chimpanzees of Gombe. And to do that book, I had to myself learn all the things I would have learned had I been an undergraduate, which I never was. And so for the first time, I felt competent to go and talk to people in medical research labs. And as for the situation in Africa, I knew it was bad, but I think all of us were shocked when the information for the first time came together like that.
And you have actually gone into medical research labs, which must be an incredibly difficult experience for you, given all of your experiences, to go into a laboratory where you see the chimpanzees in captivity and confinement like that.
Well, the first time I did that, I was completely shattered and shocked. I mean, I didn't know what to say. It was so horrific. And that's when I decided I needed to try to do something, which meant sitting down with those people and talking to them, which made me a little reviled by some of the animal rights people who said I shouldn't be even talking to them. But of course, if you don't talk to people, you can't hope for change. And now we find the National Institutes of Health, under the leadership of Francis Collins, has decided to retire most of their 350 chimpanzees into sanctuaries. Finally.
When you travel around and you talk to people, you give a lot of speeches, you do a lot of interviews, you tell a lot of stories, and you have a real gift for storytelling, and you've seen so many amazing things. Can you tell me a story that you feel connects with audiences and really changes the way that people think?
Well, there's so many. It's rather difficult off the top of my head to think of one. But I think when the first chimpanzee who lost his fear of me, David Greybeard, and he actually was allowing me to follow him through the forest, this is back in 1960, And I thought I'd lost him, and I found him sitting, looking back, and honestly, as though he was waiting for me. And I picked up a ripe fruit and held it out to him on my hand, and he turned away. And then he turned back as I put my hand closer, looked directly into my eyes, dropped the fruit, but very gently squeezed my fingers, which is how chimpanzees reassure each other. So there was perfect communication between us, using a language that probably predates words.
In 1991, after you had changed the course of your life and started traveling to give speeches and educate people, you also founded a group called Roots and Shoots. And this is a group for kids around the world to educate them about the environment and help them get involved, to empower them to make change. You started that with a group of students in Tanzania. Can you tell me about your first experience with those students?
Well, there were 12 high school students, and they came because I'd been talking in their schools. They came from 9 different schools to talk to me because they wanted to know more. And they were upset at that time. They weren't getting environmental education at school. Some of them were upset about the street children. Some of them were angry that the government wasn't doing more to prosecute poachers who killed animals in their national parks. And they wanted me to do something about it. And I said, well, look, I love Tanzania, but you're Tanzanians and you're growing up here. So maybe we can find a way that you can help with some of these things that you're passionate about. So it all began like that. And the chimpanzees were sort of in the middle because they're like a link between us and the rest of the animal kingdom. So right from the start, it was decided that every group would choose themselves 3 different projects to make the world better, to help people, to help other animals, and to help the environment, with a theme of let's learn to live in peace and harmony with each other and with the natural world. So what began with 12 high school students today is in 135 countries, and we have members from preschool through university and even some adults, and they are changing the world.
In your work with children everywhere, and I'm sure that this is somewhat true in Africa just as it is in Iowa, are spending less time in nature, are spending less time in close contact with animals. Do you think back to what your early experiences were with animals and nature to try to think about how you can help these children connect?
Oh, we do all the time, because I think contact with the natural world is really important for young children, because we're dealing with young adults as well. But for young children, I think it helps their psychological development. Scientific experiments have shown that. And so with our program, we encourage them to get out there, like having competitions and taking them out to see the natural world. Or sometimes in the inner city, we have to take the natural world into them. That once children have the opportunity to see and feel and smell and touch the natural world, they do change. And I do think it's tremendously important. And I'm saddened with the amount of time that young people spend today on electronic gadgets instead of being out in the open as I used to be.
You write so many wonderful stories about the chimpanzees that you've gotten to know over the years, but also you frequently mention a dog that you were very close to as a child. He wasn't your dog, but he was a dog you knew, and his name was Rusty. Tell us just a little bit about Rusty.
Well, Rusty belonged to people in a hotel around the corner from us. And I was walking a dog for a sweet shop lady who didn't have time always. And this little black dog tagged along behind. He had glints of rust in his hair in the sunshine. And I didn't have much time for him until one day when I was trying to teach this other dog, who was really stupid, just to do shake hands. And he couldn't learn it. And suddenly this black dog put his paw out, and I'd never taught him at all. And I thought, wow, this is something really special. So from that moment on, every single day, he came round to the house about 6 in the morning, barked at the door, went home for lunch. I came back again and left for the night when we turfed him out at about 10 o'clock. He was my shadow. He was my teacher. He was very, very special.
And do you think you learned things from Rusty that you were able to use with the chimpanzees later?
I know I did. And when it all came home to me was when Lewis Leakey, my mentor, said that I had to get a degree because I hadn't been to college when I started with the chimps. And so I got to Cambridge University to do a PhD because he said there was no time for a BA. And I was horrified to be told I'd done everything wrong. I shouldn't give the animals chimps names because it was not scientific. They should have had numbers. And I couldn't talk about them having personalities, minds capable of thought, and especially emotions. Those were unique to us. But of course, I had learned from Rusty that none of that was true. And that's what gave me the courage to stand up for my convictions when I was at Cambridge years later.
When you tell that story, it strikes me that really, in many ways, your lack of a formal education allowed you to break through a barrier that nobody else could have broken through.
Well, I think it was very fortunate. If I look back on my life, it really seems that, in a way, I was destined to do what I do, and I was given the right gift. And that's, as long as you acknowledge you have a gift and you try to develop that gift, I take no credit for it. I was born with it. I had an amazing mother who really encouraged me to follow my dreams and my passions and gave me wise counsel. And so here I am today.
And an amazing lack of fear for a young woman from England as well.
Well, I think lots of young women had no fear, but they just didn't have the right, environment to enable them to follow their dreams. They didn't have a wonderful mother like me.
We're taking a short break here. I'm talking with Dr. Jane Goodall, who, of course, transformed the way that we study animals, transformed the field of animal behavior, and changed the way we think about what it means to be human. She'll be coming to Iowa City Monday evening at 7:30, speaking at Carver Hawkeye Arena. Her speech, Sowing the Seeds of Hope, is free and open to the public, and we will continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and this hour I'm talking with two of the world's leading primatologists. In just a moment, I'll talk with Jill Preetz of Iowa State University. With me now is the legendary Jane Goodall, and she is coming to Iowa City. She'll be speaking Monday evening at 7:30 at Carver Hawkeye Arena. Her speech, Sowing the Seeds of Hope, is free and open to the public. And Jane, just before the break, we were talking about your work with children, with the group that has spread around the world, Roots and Shoots. There are many chapters that have sprung up really all over the world. And you started it with high school students in Tanzania. And I spend a lot of time thinking about the kind of environmental education that we give our kids here in Iowa. And I noticed that a lot of different ways that it comes up in the curriculum focuses on animals that are far away. A friend of mine calls them charismatic megafauna. We talk about polar bears, and we talk about chimpanzees, and we talk about elephants. But sometimes I worry that children are taught about these animals that are far away, and they miss out on the immediacy of the environment around them. Does that concern you?
Well, that's exactly what Roots and Shoots is about. It's about, honestly, if you look at what's going on in the world today, all the human problems, the misery, the poverty, the violence, the crime, and then all the environmental destruction, it's pretty grim. And I think the reason that a lot of people don't get involved is they feel helpless. So I like to say, okay, let's spread the world out in front of us and divide it up into thousands and thousands of tiny little pieces like a jigsaw puzzle. Don't try and change the whole world. You can't. But you can take one of those little pieces and you can change what happens there. And if you know that there are hundreds and thousands of other young people just like you changing their little piece of the jigsaw, suddenly you realize, yes, we can do it. That's the empowering thing. Letting them tackle projects and deal with creatures, as you say, on their own doorstep. yes, they can help chimps and elephants, and my goodness, they need it now, but not to the exclusion of concern and understanding about their own backyard, their own special environment where they are.
Those of us in the first world have the luxury of being able to worry more about chimpanzees than we worry about where our next meal is going to come from. With the young people that you work with in Africa and that all of the other people that are involved with Roots and Shoots work with in Africa, do you find that message is getting across, or are the economic conditions in so many African nations a real barrier to young people caring about the environment?
Well, they're a barrier to everything. And it was in about the early 90s that I realized, when I flew over Gombe National Park where the chimps are and saw around it all the trees had gone, that people were struggling to survive. There were more than the land could support. And I realized then, if we don't help the people, if we don't give them alternative ways of living, if we don't help them to have a better lifestyle, we cannot possibly even try to conserve chimpanzees or their forests. And so that led to a program called Take Care, or Takari, which from a very small beginning of 12 villages, we seem to like 12, don't we, is now in 52 villages around Gombe and spreading out to other areas to protect other chimps. And it's completely holistic. The villagers first told us what they felt we could do to help. We got a very small grant to start with. And now we are encouraging them to use more suitable farming methods. We work a lot with women, empowering them, keeping girls in school, because as women's education improves, so family size tends to drop. And these poor women, you know, they have sometimes 10 children. Of course, they can't afford them. The misery gets worse. The more and more forest is cut down, because you cut down trees to grow food or make charcoal just to survive. So there's no way conservation can work unless the local people become our partners. And that's what's happened.
You are traveling, as I mentioned, 300 days a year, giving these speeches. You're almost 80 years old. You have a birthday in a couple of weeks. So clearly this is something that is so important to you. And you've given so much of yourself to this cause. But you also keep seeing news reports with bad news. How do you stay hopeful?
Well, I stay hopeful partly because of our Roots and Shoots program that I've just mentioned, partly because of the Takari program. We now have a band of trees that have been restored all around Gombe National Park because the villagers get it, because nature is so resilient, and give it a chance, and things that we have destroyed can once again be restored, even if not completely as they were before. The energy and determination and sometimes courage of young people, and what I call the indomitable human spirit, the people who tackle seemingly impossible tasks and won't give up. And if you put all this together, and you see, everywhere I go, I get to hear all that's bad. But I also see all that's going on that's good and positive and encouraging. And that's a message that needs to be shared, because if people lose hope, they give up. And, you know, especially if our children lose hope, then there is no hope. So that's how I manage to keep a positive spirit.
Do you still go back to Gombe?
Oh, yes. I go back twice a year, briefly. But I also visit our other chimpanzee projects in different countries. And interestingly, I was just with in Senegal when you're going to be speaking to Jill.
Yes.
After me. I didn't see her there. I hope I'll see her when I come to Iowa, because I know about her great research in Senegal. And Jane Goodall Institute Spain has a wonderful project in Senegal, quite near where Jill is. They all know each other.
How wonderful. We have just 1 minute left, and I know that there is at least one classroom of young people who is studying you right now, listening to us right now. What is your message to them?
Well, my message to them is that I hope that they will listen to words that were first told to me by my mother, that maybe some of you dream of doing something when you grow up. Maybe people laugh at you and say, you'll never do that. I mean, I didn't have any money when I dreamed of Africa. But my mother used to say to me, if you really want something, then you're going to have to work really hard, take advantage of opportunity, and never, never give up.
Dr. Goodall, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I'll be there Monday night with my kids.
Terrific. Let's meet.
All right.
All right. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Dr. Jane Goodall. She'll be speaking Monday night at 7:30 in Iowa City at Carver Hawkeye Arena. Her speech, Sowing the Seeds of Hope, is free and open to the public. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.